appreciate the thought. Very nice of you.
But I don't need it. I have so many friends that the Shalach Manas is piled up in front of the door. I can't open the door. So why don't you stay home, save the trip? It's okay. I appreciate it. It's the thought that counts. So the Ramah says, you know what? He's right. It's the thought that counts. So if my recipient was mochel, my recipient said, it's okay, I don't need to have you actually bring it, that's it, I'm done, I'm yotze. I have fulfilled my obligation of Shalach Manos because I offered to bring it, my friend told me it's okay, I'm off the hook. It's quite an easy way out. And many of the Sfarim that came later, at the same time came later, question this Ramah, Chicharish, for example, and many others, so where does he know this from? If I look at my Megillah, it says, Mishloach manos ish l'reyehu. It doesn't say, offering manos ish l'reyehu. Why in the world would I think that I fulfill my obligation if the person I'm offering it to says it's okay, it's a thought that counts? Some suggest, while we do have such a concept of mechila, of saying it's okay, for example, if I owe somebody $100, and my friend says it's okay, you can keep it, so then the Havach allows me to keep it, well, that's terrific, but that only works in cases where we know that that's what it's about. We know that this is something I owe to my friend specifically. He has the right to say, I don't need you to give it to me. And that's good enough. But how do we know that that mechanism is true when it comes to Shalach Manos? So this was a very controversial story that the Ramah set this in motion, this whole question, where is he getting this ruling from? And the issue was debated for a couple of hundred years, until it reached the desk of the Chassam Sofer, the great Rav Moshe Sofer of Pressburg, one of the most prominent poskim of all time. In his Tshuvas Chassam Sofer and Siman Kuf Ayin Tes, he took up this question. And he said, so let's try to figure it out. Is the Ramah correct? Is he correct that if I offer you Shalach Manos and you say it's okay, you can keep it, save the trip, that's good enough? So the Chassam Sofer suggested, we have to try to figure out what's the point of Shalach Manos. What is it that we're trying to accomplish? I have to do some research. And in order to try to understand the topic, so he dug up two earlier sources, two earlier discussions about Shalach Manos, which he suggested these are the key reasons that we could put forward for the obligation. On the one hand, there is the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen was one of the Rishonim, Rishon from Germany, and he wrote in his Tshuvas in Siman Kuf Yud Aleph that the purpose of Shalach Manos is to help with another one of the mitzvos of Purim. And we know that overall there are four primary mitzvos of Purim, in addition to the obligation of reading the Megillah and the obligation of Matanos Le'Avyonim. So we have two others, Shalach Manos and the Suda. So says the Trumas Hadeshen, those last two are linked. That because we have a need to have a Suda on Purim, so we should be concerned that maybe not everyone has enough to have a Suda. So we should send around gifts of food to people so that we can make sure they'll be able to have a Suda on Purim. So essentially the purpose of Mitzvah 3, Shalach Manos, is to facilitate Mitzvah 4, Sudas Purim. That was the perspective of the Trumas Hadeshen. The other perspective that he discovered was that of the Manos HaLevi. The Manos HaLevi was written by perhaps a familiar name, if the Sefer is not as familiar. This is a far second. It's the second most famous thing this author ever wrote. His name was Rav Shlomo HaLevi Alkabetz. So it was much more famous. Number one list on his resume was Lecha Dodi. So he wrote Lecha Dodi. And he also wrote a commentary on Megillas Esther. It's called the Manos HaLevi. And this line in the Manos HaLevi became very famous because the Chassam Sofer brought it to everyone's attention. So this became a far second of the second most famous thing he ever wrote. So says the Manos HaLevi, commenting on the pasuk in Megillas Esther that talks about Shalach Manos, says, why do we have this obligation? Because, if you remember, when Haman comes to Ahasuerus and he says he wants to get rid of the Jews, so he says, Yeshno Amecha, there is this one nation of people, Mufuz Mufara, that are scattered and dispersed, and we should get rid of them. So in response to Haman, so to speak, we want to show that we're not scattered and dispersed. Maybe we are geographically, but at the same time we are united, we are one, and we'll do whatever we can to increase Ahava V'Yachva V'Shalom V'Reis, to increase unity among the Jewish people. So since we know the fastest way to a man's heart is through his stomach, so if we send gifts of food, so that will make people friendly, that will create these bonds of friendship, and that will accomplish this refutation of the way that Haman described us. So these two reasons, says the Chasam Sofer, it seems to give us two different perspectives on what Shalach Manas is about. Either it's there to help with the Suda, or it's there to create bonds of friendship among the Jewish people. So therefore, says the Chasam Sofer, is the Ramah correct when the Ramah says that it's the thought that counts? If you offer it and the recipient says it's okay, save the trip, is he right? Well, it would seem to depend. That if we follow the second view, the view of the Manos HaLevi, that it's all about making friends. So yes, it's the thought that counts. When you call up your friend and you say, listen, I have the Shalach Manas for you. I'm thinking of you. I'd like to bring it over. And your friend says, oh, that's so nice. Listen, I'm doing fine. You keep it. Yes, you've accomplished something towards strengthening the bonds of friendship. But if the purpose is to help people out with the Suda, so then, says the Chasam Sofer, it doesn't make sense to say that we would allow mechila. And that requires another little bit of explanation. Why doesn't it make sense? It doesn't make sense because, first of all, most people would not want to admit that they need the Shalach Manas. So you're going to give it to somebody so they can help out with their Suda. If they actually need it, if the rule is, if they need it, they'll take it. They don't need it, they won't take it. So people aren't going to want to admit they'll take it. People aren't going to want to admit they're going to need it. They're going to say, listen, I'm fine like everyone else. Keep it. So if we have an attitude where some people take and some people don't, it's going to undermine the whole purpose. Besides which, you could also save yourself a lot of money by just calling up people who you know don't need it. So that's an easy way to undermine the whole takana. So if the idea is that we want to make sure that food is given to people who don't otherwise have enough, it's going to undermine the concept if we allow there to be mechila. So says the Chasam Sofer, that's how he understands this whole debate. If it's about helping out with the Suda, Mechila is not an option. You have to successfully transmit Shalach Manas to at least one other person, or you're not Yotzei. While if the idea is to make friends, so then maybe the Ramah is right, it's the thought that counts. So this tshuva was phenomenally influential. The Chasam Sofer himself, of course, was tremendously influential, but this tshuva set a template that any discussion of Shalach Manas in the past 200 years has drawn upon this tshuva. It's very hard to see any discussion of any issue within Shalach Manas that doesn't, within the first few words, invoke the Manos HaLevi, the Trumas Hadesh, and the Chasam Sofer. He set the pattern for discussing everything about this topic. So no matter what it is, you ask somebody, should I send my Shalach Manas in a blue basket or a purple basket? So they'll say, well, it's probably dependent on the Manos HaLevi and the Trumas Hadesh, because if you want to make it fit for the Suda, so a blue basket looks better on the table, but if you want to make friends, so purple is a more cheerful color, so it all depends, everything's going to somehow tie in to this issue. This was really a phenomenally influential tshuva, and there's been a tremendous amount of faithfulness to this discussion in all of the past 200 years. Early on in that time period, there was, I believe, a contemporary of the Chasam Sofer, Blazer Deutsch, was one of the Dayanim in Hungary. As the author of the Tshuvas Chalkas HaSada, he tried to stem the tide. He said he thinks the whole thing is a little bit exaggerated. That it isn't really much of a debate, that really the Trumas Hadeshen and the Manos HaLevi were saying the same thing. That they both agree that it's all about making friends. It's just the Trumas Hadeshen says that since you're looking to make friends, so we should try to focus on what's most necessary, what will be the most helpful. Okay, so since they have to have a Suda that day, so food is the best gift. And something other than that is not going to be as helpful that day when they're worried about the Suda. So he thought the whole thing was not really a debate. It was really all saying the same thing. Let's try to stop this train. Didn't work. Chasam Sofer's influence was greater. And this became, again, part of almost every discussion about this topic, as we'll see some examples in the next few minutes. Hi.
It seems like Hesher is now becoming the actual mitzvah.
Well, it would be if there wasn't any specific mitzvah for it. So sometimes a mitzvah can be preparatory for another mitzvah, but the chiddush here is that it has its own mitzvah status. So if we didn't have this, then maybe you could figure out that there is a need to help people prepare for it. But especially because you're talking about other people, so it goes beyond the Hechsher Mitzvah. Hechsher Mitzvah for you would be shopping for your Suda. That would be a Hechsher Mitzvah. Here it's a mitzvah stucker, really, for somebody else. That's how it seems to be formulated, so it's really an independent mitzvah anyway, even just conceptually. But especially when you have a pasuk that comes and says it, so even if it does have a preparatory role, then for sure it would have a preparatory status. or have had someone unique status. So in any event, the Chassam Sofer really had this tremendous impact, and he himself continues the stream a little bit before he finishes this tshuva, so he gives another example of how this could be applied. So he notes that this may also be relevant to a situation of somebody who's what we call Somech al Shulchan Acherim, that let's say somebody is not the breadwinner of the house, he or she doesn't pay for their own meals. So if they don't pay for their own meals, are they obligated to pay for somebody else's meal? Are they obligated to provide Shalach Manas if that is indeed the purpose? So he suggests, again, it depends, that if it's about providing meals, if that's what it's there for, to be giving the Suda to other people, so you're probably right that if you don't provide your own meals, so then you wouldn't be obligated to provide for others. But if it's about making friends, okay, so even though you don't pay for your own meals, no reason why you shouldn't be sending around small gifts to other people to also be a part of this obligation of spreading friendship on Purim. So as he notes, the Ramah also rules that even, let's say, for example, a married woman who's not the breadwinner of the house, who's being supported by her husband, she is also obligated personally in Shalach Manas. And once again, the same detractor said to him, where does he get that from? He brought various proofs why it shouldn't be. So the Chassam Sofer says it's the same idea, that because the Ramah is following his view, the same Ramah who says it's the thought that counts, because it's all about making friends, so therefore it doesn't tie into the fact that you pay or don't pay for your own meal, you're still involved in this process, so therefore married women are just as obligated as everybody else. That was the view the Chassam Sofer took in explanation of the Ramah, following his own approach, that these two positions are the basis of all the issues here. Used to be, yes sir? That's what it sounds like, although in theory you could probably combine, because most people give more than what's necessary anyway, but she has her own personal obligation, that's how he understands. So there was one issue, which for a while I thought could be the one issue that could avoid this whole discussion. It maybe shouldn't make a difference how you land on the whole Manos Alevi Trumas Adashim question. It should be true or not true regardless. There was a chumrah that was suggested, and many of us are familiar with this idea, that perhaps we should require shlichus when it comes to Shalach Manas. The one who really brought this to discussion was the Binyan Tzion. The Binyan Tzion is Rabbi Yaakov Ellinger, was one of the Rebbeim of Rav Shamshon Ufal Hirsch, he's the author of the Sefer Aruch Lener and many of the Masechtos of Shas. So the Tshuvas Binyan Tzion starts a discussion that maybe we should require that Shalach Manas be done through an intermediary, which is based on an implication in the Ran, in his commentary to Megillah. Because you could argue the pasuk sounds like it, Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reyehu, that maybe an integral part of the process is that you send it through someone else. So there was a whole back and forth about this. Rav Shlomo Kluger in his Tshuvas Ha'ilef L'Chas Shlomo has a little bit of an analysis of this. It's a little bit of a difficult idea to understand, because we don't find anywhere else in Halacha that there's a din that requires shlichus. Shlichus is usually an option, generally a less preferable option. We have a rule, mitzvah bo, yoser mi b'shlucha. We prefer that you not use an intermediary, that you do something yourself, even when it's possible to use an intermediary. So to say that we require you to use an intermediary is normally a violation of the principle of shlichus. Normally the rule is, if it's impossible for you to do it yourself, then you can't do it through a shliach either. So to say there's a halacha that requires shlichus is already a conceptual difficulty. And it's also hard because so many people fulfill this idea. For example, they use children. They give a shalach manas to a child to bring over. And if the child is not an adult, is not obligated in the mitzvah, so normally shlichus would require that you use somebody who is obligated in the mitzvah. So that was addressed by some of the svarim, the Tvar Avram, for example, the Rav of Kovno explained that we're not talking about halachic shlichus. We're not talking about the normal concept of shlucho shaladam kamoso. We're talking about an intermediary. We're talking about physically sending, not the idea of appointing someone to take your halachic place. It's a whole different concept. But in any event, this chumrah is probably not required, and the Binyan Tzion himself, who was the one who started the whole discussion, he didn't conclude that it was necessary. He didn't feel so. There isn't really anyone, I believe, who really maintains that this is an absolute necessity. But in any event, for a while, I thought this was one issue that shouldn't be impacted by the Manos Halevi and the Trumas Hadashim. Sounds like either way, that if we're trying to get people food for their meals, so whether you do it directly, you send it through a shliach, it's going to get there. And if you're trying to make friends, so again, either you send it yourself or you send it with a shliach, it shouldn't make a difference. In either case, certainly, why should a shliach be better? Why should a shliach enhance the process? Hard to understand. Then I saw that the Satmar Rav has a tshuva about this. The Satmar Rav and his tshuva is Divrei Yoel, so he thought maybe it does depend. And in order to understand why it should depend, you have to paint the story in somewhat of an extreme picture. You have to use extreme examples to see why it would make a difference. Let's say, for example, case one. So I happen to be walking around on the street per morning, giving out my shalach manas to all my friends. I have a whole stack of bags in my hands. And I happen to run into somebody in the street, who I wasn't really thinking of so much. And he says to me, "Oh, hi, how are you? So good to see you." And I say, "Oh, great to see you. Shalach manas here, why don't you have some?" "Okay, fine." So he might be happy to get the shalach manas. He can take it home. It can be a part of his meal. But is he going to be so flattered that I gave him shalach manas? Probably not. Case number two, let's assume the same guy, the next year he moves to Alaska. He moves very far away. Then, per morning, all of a sudden he comes out of his igloo and he sees that there is a Pony Express, or the, whatever they have over there, who's coming and he says, "Look, I have a package for you that comes from Washington Heights, Manhattan, that your friend was thinking of you and he sends you shalach manas." So the fact that I have such a long process, that I have an intermediary involved, so that is by necessity going to require more forethought. It's going to mean that I'm thinking of you even when you're not in front of me. And that's going to accomplish a lot more in terms of making friends. So basically, the Divrei Yoel's perspective is that if it was about helping with the Suda Sira, it doesn't matter, it gets to the same way either way. But if it's about making friends, so it's much more impressive when the guy's not in your presence and you're still thinking of him so much so that you have someone else go to him, then if you happen to see the person where it doesn't necessarily involve the same degree of forethought. Of course, you could view that issue differently, but that's yet another example of how this influence of this tshuva keeps coming up. Hi.
Is there a qualitative difference that we can apply in terms of, let's say, someone is not my friend or someone I've had a dispute with? Is there a preference that should be given to the basis of a friendship that is on a lower level?
Presumably there is. It's not spelled out in much of the literature, although I saw one sefer that suggested that the idea of two manos, this is kind of a symbolic concept, but that it's a process, that you have to first get rid of all the problems and then do something positive. So it's the two steps. One mana is to cover over whatever issues you have, and the next mana is to make things better. But it certainly would seem that if you're able to effectively not only enhance friendships, but get rid of previous machlokas, that would certainly make sense, that should be a preference, if that is the goal. And as opposed to if the goal is to help with the Suda, that you should maybe target people who need it more. So there does seem to be a lot of logic to that. Hi.
In terms of timing, if you want to send shalach manas to someone out of town, is it better to send it earlier so it gets to someone on Purim Day, or send it on Purim Day being the key?
Perfect segue, because that's exactly what we're up to. So after this, probably the next questions, we should probably wait to the end to see if we come. Anyway, that's exactly what we're up to. So that was a discussion. And once again, thanks like an infomercial, he was planted to ask that question. So essentially, that is an issue. What about timing? So there you have, once again, the Rama seems to be, once again, expressing Shitaso, expressing his opinion. Purim is a fascinating yantiv because it deviates from the model that we have the rest of the year. Particularly Pesach, which comes right afterwards. And so Pesach, we have such a focus on Pesach night. All the mitzvahs of Pesach take place at night. Purim is the complete opposite. Purim, everything takes place during the day. There are some who suggested, or Soloveitchik was quoted as saying, that maybe Purim night isn't even Purim halachically, that everything that has an obligation on Purim, even the Megillah reading, which sociologically is more attention at night, halachically it's clear there's a bigger attention to the daytime reading. Everything about Purim is really about the daytime. So Shalach Manas is like that also. Shalach Manas, the obligation is the daytime. So the Rama says, and we'll see in a second, that this also expresses his consistent chita. The Rama says you have to make sure that you send the Shalach Manas so that it is received during the daytime and not the night before. So what is he saying? It seems to be that he's expressing his chita here yet again. Because if the idea is that you need people to have the food for the Suda, so then, let it get it there the night before. Let it get there the day before. If they have good enough refrigeration, let it get there a couple days before, whatever it takes, to make sure that they'll have it in time for the Suda itself. But if the idea is you're looking to make friends, So then how does that happen? When does that get accomplished? It gets accomplished by the, oh, isn't that nice moment. The moment when they get the package and say, oh, isn't that nice. Oh, look, he thought of me. So when is the, oh, isn't that nice moment? That's when you receive it. So even if you receive it the night before and you have it the next day, so the moment of friendship really came when you received it, which technically was before the time of the obligation. Now, of course, we encourage making friends all year round. But the specific obligation of Purim is going to require that you create those, oh, isn't that nice moments on Purim itself. So that's why the Ramah, following his opinion, seems to be saying that even the night before, which all of us would think at least by practice is Purim, says the Ramah, that's not enough. It has to get there Purim daytime. And there is a whole discussion, the commentary in the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch, the Ber Heitev, who discusses from the Yad Arum, more along the lines of what you're talking about. What if it's chlal before Purim, and you live some distance away, and you need to send it in a process that's going to take some time? So, first of all, what are we interested in? Are we interested in when you send it, or are we interested in when you receive it? So, you seem to agree that we're interested in when it's received. And even then, the question is, should it be received any time close to Purim, or are we following the Ramah's preference that it be received on Purim itself, because it's the moment of receipt that really creates that, oh, isn't that nice moment, that is the mitzvah here. It's fascinating to see also, there is a tshuva, the Kajugel of a Rav. Kajugel of a Rav was a student of the Sachachov Rebbe, the Avnei Nezer. Kajugel of a Rav was a fantastic Iwi, who was also, if you read his tshuvas, if you go to the library, 5A in the library is dedicated in his memory. So you can look on the wall, there's a picture of the Kajugel of a Rav. So the Kajugel of a Rav, one of the themes in his tshuvos, besides the phenomenal creativity, is that he was always Mlamed Tzchus on Klal Yisrael. He was always looking to a way to explain why is there a practice that doesn't seem to be justifiable. He'll tell you how it's justifiable. So as an example of that, so he discusses that sometimes we find that there are people who are driving around with Shalach Manas very late in the day, so late in the day that it's already after the day, that after it's already dark on Purim afternoon turning into night, so that's already not Purim anymore. Here in America, that's Shushan Purim, and Yerushalayim, that's nothing. It's already completely after Purim. So why are people doing this? Why are people still only performing their Shalach Manas? And if they're starting, that's especially surprising. But why are they continuing to plug away at the Shalach Manas after Purim is already over? So he thought that once again, this could benefit from the whole discussion of the Manos Alevi and the Trumas Hadeshen. But in the other direction, he says, if the purpose is, like the Trumas Hadeshen, the purpose is to provide for the Suda, so then, it's interesting, when it comes to the Suda, so we see that there is such a model, and many people have this in practice, that as long as the Suda starts on Purim, it can continue beyond Purim. So it just has to get in under the wire that the Suda should start while it's still Purim day. And then, after the nighttime, that's all still considered to be Sudas Purim. And that seems to be a justifiable practice. It's a whole discussion of itself. But if that's the case, so says the Kajugel of a Rav, so since after Purim, people are still involved in fulfilling the mitzvah of Sudas Purim, you can still help their Sudas Purim even technically after Purim is over, so therefore it makes sense, Shalach Manas could still be accomplished during that time period. Hi. Right, so the Matanos Tav Yonim question is a fascinating question because you do have a lot of the same overlapping concepts. The problem is it is a whole different sugya, which is going to draw at some different points, so I don't know if we'll be able to get to it today, but just parenthetically, just to address it for a second, it does have many overlapping questions where you could also have a case where we're going to ask, are we interested in your giving on Purim or it being received on Purim? And that's an important question, and there's a case to be made for either. But the situations that you often come in contact with are really that they're both happening on Purim, because most assume that really it should be given out on Purim, but even when you're called about money that's going to be given out later, so you're still accomplishing that stock is being given on Purim, because they have a certain amount of money that they have under their control, these organizations, that they can't release unless it can be covered from some other donation. So when they know a donation comes in, then they're able to release the money that they already have. So even though your money won't actually be transferred until later, but you will make your donation on Purim, and the poor will benefit on Purim, so it actually does accomplish that in practice. When that's not the practice, there's still what to talk about. There is a whole discussion about that, but it gets us into a whole separate sugi, because Matanos Levionim has its own internal rules. So in any event, this is a whole discussion when it comes to Shalach Manas. Is it, should we see if we'll discuss it? You could call it Purim. Right, so in practice, we only assume like that in certain b'di'evid reasons for Kriyas and Megillah and the like. In practice, it does seem to be pretty solid that the mitzvos of Purim are on the actual single day of Purim. Yemei Purim is usually a phrase that we use to talk about Purim Shulash, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So most of the questions we'll probably get to. So just another example of how there's a tremendous faithfulness to this whole Chasam Sofer Tshuva, regardless of the different ways in which it could be applied, is there is a discussion about the question of, is one in fulfillment of Shalach Manas if he gives it to a child? A child who's not obligated in mitzvos, is one in fulfillment of Shalach Manas? So on this topic, there's no machlokis. Everyone agrees. Everyone agrees that it depends on the Chasam Sofer, the Trumas Hadash, and the Manas Levi. That much we all agree. The question is, how does it depend? Oh, then you have a machlokas. Then there is a range of different applications as to how it applies. So, for example, some say, well, if I hold like the Manas Levi, that it's about making friends, so then it's got to be somebody of a comparable age group. It's got to be somebody who's up here. It doesn't make sense that an adult is going to give to a child. But if it's about the Suda, so okay, so the children are also part of the Suda, so then it also accomplishes something. And there are others who say the exact opposite, that, oh, if it's about making friends, okay, you can make friends with a kid too, that's also a mitzvah of Shalom V'Reis. But if it's about the Suda, so then maybe only adults are obligated in the mitzvah of Suda, and therefore maybe we should only give it to an adult, or we should give to kids too, but we should only give to an adult, at least to one, to fulfill our obligation of Shalach Manas. So there's no machlokas that it depends on the Manas Levi and Trumas Hadesh, and that everyone acknowledges. The question of how it applies, that's going to be, that is somewhat of a discussion. There's also a discussion, Rashi Pesach Frank has a whole piece about this, that the Aruch HaShulchan writes that even though technically speaking one could maybe work on Purim, and it's no issa malacha, so theoretically one could go off on a business trip the whole day, he could go to the Hashkama Minyan and hear the earliest Megillah, go out the whole day and work, maybe technically fulfill his Suda in some perfunctory way, he says that's really not right. You can have your secretary take care of the Shalach Manas and the Matanas Levionim. He says that's not right, that really you should be more directly involved. So Rashi Pesach Frank thought that this really also relates to the Manas Halevi perspective, that if it's just an issue of trying to provide Shalach Manas for people they should have, okay, so you can have your secretary write your checks to Staka for you. But if the idea is you want to make friends, so then more personal involvement is really going to have an impact, and therefore you shouldn't have others take care of it completely. And they'll somehow have to combine that with the idea of the preference for shlichus, so the actual, if you assume there is such a preference, which again was not necessarily agreed upon, but if there is such a preference for shlichus, okay, so the bottom line, the actual transporting will be done by somebody else, but it should show your own effort invested in the process, and that's apparently what the Aruch HaShulchan seems to be getting at. Hi. Oh, so that's also going to get into this. So we'll try to get to some of those things. It also enters into the discussion. So there is, based on ideas similar to this, so there is a tshuva of someone who certainly has the right to follow the views of the Chasam Sofer, the Ksav Sofer. The Ksav Sofer was the son of the Chasam Sofer, so if everyone else is following him, for sure the Ksav Sofer should follow the Chasam Sofer's approach. So he has a tshuva doing that, where he talks about something that is not advisable nowadays. This is really not a good idea today. But, says, let's say, theoretically, one wanted to give Shalach Manas anonymously. Nowadays, would not advise leaving an unmarked package outside people's houses, but once upon a time, you could ask the question that maybe that should work. So the Ksav Sofer thought that it should depend on these two possibilities, and especially again, you know, covet to his father that he should have the same approach. But also here it's especially compelling that there's two very different directions one could go in. That if it's about staga, if it's about providing the suda for people who don't have one, so then we know the Rambam talks about different levels of staga, and it's preferable to give staga anonymously. It's preferable not to take credit for it. So then if that's what we're talking about, so anonymous shalach manas is a good idea from that perspective. But if the idea is that we're looking to make friends, so then here it's a little bit trickier, but then the assumption is you're not going to make friends if they don't know who to be friendly with. Now you could argue, well, maybe it's even more effective, they'll just be happy towards all of Klal Yisrael that this kind of stuff is going on. That could be true, there's a case to be made for that, but he seems to be assuming, as many others assume as well, that it's only going to really create this kesher if they know who to thank, if they know who to hold responsible for. Oh, we'll get to another. We'll get to a lot of these points, hopefully. So there is also a discussion. What is the shear for shalach manas? Not the question that we're familiar with in terms of the idea of two manos each to one person, etc., etc. But how much should the shalach manas be worth, or how much should they add up to? So the Mishnah Berurah was of the view that they should be ashava pruta. We know that from weddings that there is an idea of a minimal monetary value. And the Chesed Avram is quoted by later sources as maintaining that it should be a kezayis, should be what we consider the smallest amount that's called eating. So it would seem that that already addresses or evokes these two perspectives, that if it's about being mahane people, if it's about giving people some pleasure, so then a shava pruta is considered to be the smallest amount of benefit that you can give to somebody. But if it's about providing for the meal, so then we're interested in what's called eating, what's significant in the world of eating, so then a kezayis is perhaps a more relevant measurement. But shava pruta varies from time to time and place to place. Let's say now it's about 2 cents, something very small. But that brings us to the next point. So then the Ritva wrote the earlier, the Ritva was a Rishon, but the Ritva writes in his commentary to Megillah and Dav Zayin that he suggests that maybe we should put on a different requirement, that it depends a little bit who we're talking about. It says, a Davar Katan, Li Ashir or Me Ashir, that if we're talking about a very small, insignificant gift that is either going to a rich person or from a rich person, he thought that was a problem. Let's say, for example, so we're here in New York, so we want to send shalach manas to Meir Bloomberg, who's, I think, the richest person in New York. So if I'm going to send something very insignificant, and I'm going to mail it to Meir Bloomberg, so it's really not going to get noticed among all of his much more noticeable resources. So am I in fulfillment of shalach manas? So if it's about making friends, it's really not going to notice, not going to have any kind of impact at all. If it's about helping with the suda, so it's certainly not the best choice, so you're going to look to help with the suda, but technically speaking, okay, he can make his suda one pruta more because of what I threw in there, so then maybe he can make a stretch that's effective. And so too in the other direction, that if he sends shalach manas to you, and it's very insignificant, so if it's to help with the suda, okay, so then it'll help a little bit with the suda. But if he's trying to make friends with you and you know he's capable of so much more that this is not anything that he's going to even feel in any sense of the word, so then maybe you could argue that that's a lack also. Which opened up a whole new route of discussion that maybe if you're very aware that this is not meaningful to the giver, that maybe that is somehow a lack in shalach manas, that if we're interested in providing for the suda, so that okay, it doesn't really make a difference how much this costs the giver as long as one gets what he needs. But if the idea is that he's trying to make friends, if it's obvious this isn't meaningful to him, so then that might be a problem in that area. So Rav Zhulti in a Sefer Mishnah Zavetz, he talks about this Ritva, and he brings up a question which also directly flows from the two possibilities. What about, there is a principle the Gemara talks about in Subis and elsewhere, that sometimes we compel one to fulfill mitzvahs, kofen al mitzvahs. There are certain mitzvahs which Beis Din will get involved and will compel you to do, even if you're not willing to do it on your own. So should we compel shalach manas? You have somebody who says he's not interested in doing shalach manas, he's stingy, he's going to skip this. So will Beis Din get involved and compel him to? So if it's about helping people with the suda, so it's a tzedaka type of obligation. So we do have such a concept. Specifically, the Gemara talks about kofen al tzedaka, that there are times when there is a communal responsibility that we do compel individuals to go along with. But if it's about making friends, so you have to imagine you're going to show up on somebody's porch with two U.S. Marshals on either side, and you're saying, I've been ordered to give this to you. So it's probably not going to have such an impact. It's probably not going to really impress the person so much. And therefore, one could argue that Shalach Manas, through kfiyah, through being forced, is probably not so productive if that is the goal, and that's how Rav Zsolti assumes. Similarly, when talking about this issue of how meaningful it is to the giver, so Rav Nassim Gishtetner, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, was a great post that just passed away a few months ago. So he has a tshuva in which he discusses. So let's say, for example, you could think of more common examples of this, but we'll just use the example he gives first. That let's say you have something which is aser b'hanah. It's basically not kosher on a level midrabanan. So there is a category that if somebody is a chole, a person has a certain level of illness, so he's allowed to eat something which is on this level of prohibition. So you'll say, okay, so I happen to have such an item in my house, so I can't use it. But luckily I have a friend who's just sick enough that he could eat it. So I'll send it to him with a special reverse hechsher on it, explaining what exactly its status is, but you can eat it. So that's probably not going to impress him so much for his suda. Maybe it'll help, and maybe it is an efficient use of resources. But in terms of making friends, it's probably not so helpful. Some also point out that if he is going to be grateful to you for that, that might itself be a violation of the Isser Hanah. That might itself be a benefit for you. So you really have to line up on one side in order for this to work. We could think of more common examples. You know, that people have various chumras, for example. We may have something which they feel they can't eat, but that others could comfortably eat for whatever reason. So if that's obvious when you send it to that person, so then, again, it may help for the suda. It's not really going to have that much of an impact, perhaps, in terms of making friends. So in terms of the question of avelus, so there is a discussion. The Shulchan Aruch writes that an avel is obligated in Shalach Manas, is obligated in all mitzvahs in general for the most part. But the Ramah says that's only true in terms of him sending Shalach Manas, but that he should not receive Shalach Manas. Shouldn't be the recipient of Shalach Manas. There's a whole discussion why that is. There's this beautiful sefer called Divrei Shir, is written by one of the Rabbanim in Lakewood. So he discusses that he thinks that maybe the idea is that it creates a type of sudas mereyim, that it's basically joining the suda together with somebody else in a non-geographical sense. And therefore, maybe that's inappropriate for an avil. But as others point out, but that wouldn't follow with the view we've been taking till now, that it's not about the suda for the Ramah, it's about making friends. So there are others, a sefer called Beis Av, written by a Rav in England, who says the opposite approach. He says, no, the whole idea is that since it's about making friends, so basically this is like a greeting card, this is like a Hallmark card, that's a type of Sheila Shalom, and it's a particularly joyous type of Sheila Shalom, so therefore maybe it's inappropriate for Avelis in that sense. So it's a different level of Sheila Shalom. Technically, there is a prohibition of Sheila Shalom, and how we define Sheila Shalom varies from situation to situation. So this is a particularly joyous type of Sheila Shalom, so I thought maybe that was what the Ramah was getting at. This relates to another discussion that was brought up before about Yemei HaPurim. So you could have a situation, in theory, where Purim falls out on Shabbos. In theory, to have that situation, you'll have to make Aliyah, or at least spend Purim in Yerushalayim. Maybe in Prague, but for the most part here in America, so we don't have Purim ever falling out on Shabbos. The 14th of Adar doesn't ever fall out on Shabbos, but the 15th of Adar can fall out on the Shabbos and does so once in a while. And when that happens, so if you're in Yerushalayim or a walled city that observes Purim on the 15th, so then you have a problem. You have a problem, but you have maybe a lot more fun. You have a situation where Purim is interacting with Shabbos, and because some of the mitzvot of Purim can take place on Shabbos, some can't. So then there's a whole splitting up of everything. You have a three-day Purim Jamboree, basically. But some of the mitzvahs take place on Friday, some take place on Shabbos indeed, and some take place on Sunday. So you have a three-day Purim. It's what's called a Purim Shulash. Some of the literature calls it Yemei HaPurim. Purim turns from one day to 3 days because of that situation. So there's a whole discussion, every mitzvah, there's a whole discussion, each one of the four, as to how exactly it should be performed under the circumstance. None of them are simple. But the Meiri took the view that Shalach Manas should follow the Suda. The day you have the Suda, that should be the day of the Shalach Manas. So it seems to be that this is support for the view that Shalach Manas is about the Suda. That seems to be the case. There is a slightly, according to that view, there is a slightly different spin on this, which is interesting. The Sefer called Ituri Megillah, it's one of the Talmidim and the Brisker Rav, I think, where he has an approach, and Rav Shechter has mentioned an approach along these lines also. It would really be a third school of thought, but it's more aligned with Truma Sadeshin, that the idea is, maybe it's in the opposite direction, maybe it's not about sending to help others with the Suda, but maybe it's about that we want to share our Suda with as many people as possible, so we can have a certain amount of people who can actually physically be at our house for Purva Suda, and then we kind of send the leftovers to everyone else. We try to reach out to other people so that maybe it's not about before the Suda, it's about after the Suda, that the Suda, we want to show that we're sharing our Suda not just physically with the people who are in our house, but even with people who are in other houses. That's a way of reaching out. That would also, to go back to the Avelis question, would also kind of strengthen the whole Sudas Meredis idea, if that was the concern. But again, that would be a new spin on the whole Ramah thing. There is also a discussion, we'll just try to speed up a little bit. So there's also a discussion about the common practice nowadays of doing Shalach Manas B'Shutfis. If you have many people get together and they do Shalach Manas, so is that effective? So it's definitely a good idea because it does enhance communal unity, and also it has other values to it. But whether or not it's a fulfillment of one's individual shalach manas, so that's a discussion the Rebbe Sefraim has a truth about and others have written about. And it seems to be that it depends on this issue, that if it's about helping with the suda, so then perhaps you are generating more food for people's sudas in general. If it's about making friends, and then you have to figure out whether you're really accomplishing the same when you could be signing on a long list together with other people. So it's probably advisable. These projects have many other benefits to them, but it's probably also advisable. Somebody who's doing Shalach Manas that way should also send at least one other Shalach Manas just to make sure he's covering all of his bases. There's also just kind of the flip side of the Kashrus Yisur Hanah issue that we mentioned before. So just kind of after the fact question. So let's say somebody sends a chicken to somebody as a shalach manas, which is already a problem because it has to be more prepared. Let's say something's a little more advanced in the preparation, but they discover afterwards that there is a trefa. They discover afterwards that there's a trefas issue. So is one in fulfillment of shalach manas? So again, the issue should seem to depend that if it's about helping with the suda, so then even though you tried, but it's not really going to be usable for the suda. But if it's about the thought that counts, okay. So again, the thought that counts. There is also a rather extensive discussion about the question of the bracha. Why is it that there's no bracha that's recited on the mitzvah of shalach manas? So there are many different views about this issue, but it's also interesting from a history of halacha point of view that whenever this question comes up in regards to any mitzvah, a mitzvah that doesn't have a bracha, and there's a discussion, why is there no bracha? So there are certain sources that figure very prominently in the discussion. So the first source that is usually quoted is the Tshuvas HaRashba. The Rashba in his Tshuvas in Chelek Aleph and Siman Yud Ches has a Tshuva which is quoted very frequently. Maybe misunderstood a little bit, we'll try to talk about that, but what it sounds like he's saying is as follows. That it sounds like he's saying, why is there no bracha for the mitzvah of tzedakah? How come when you give tzedakah you don't make a bracha? So the Rashba sounds like he's saying that the issue is that there's somebody else involved in the process. So what could happen is, I could make a bracha to give tzedakah, and then the guy I'm going to give tzedakah to is a little bit surprised by this incantation, he decides to run away. So I'm not going to end up actually performing the mitzvah. I'm not going to give tzedakah because I didn't get to finish. He decided to leave in the middle. So therefore, since I can't be confident that I'm in control of the situation, so perhaps we shouldn't make a bracha because of the concern that the bracha will be for nothing, that there won't actually be a mitzvah. So that's the way the Rashba is commonly understood. So if that really is the reason why some mitzvahs don't have bracha, so it's pointed out, then that's not going to explain shalach manas if we follow the view of the Ramah. Right? Since the Ramah says that if the other person declines, if the other person is mochel, you're still yotzei. So we should say perhaps that here, there's no risk. Here, you're in control of the situation. It doesn't matter whether he says yes or no. So therefore, the Rashba's answer shouldn't work. So that's how some ask a question, and others explain that no, it doesn't necessarily follow. Because the Ramah wasn't saying that you can never not fulfill your obligation. If the guy says, listen, I'm not interested in your Shalach Manas, I hate you no matter what, and throws it back in your face, so then even the Rama would say you're not Yotzei. That's not productive. The question is, if you accomplish the Shalom Reyes without actually going, he says, it's okay, thank you so much, but you can keep it, then it's a thought that counts. But in theory, there could be a situation where the guy really doesn't accept it and really does send you back on the road. So to say that you're always guaranteed that you're in control, many explain that that doesn't have to be a question, that even the Rama's perspective doesn't necessarily put this into challenge. But there are a few other approaches, just to quickly mention. So some suggest also that if they're, in general, when they have a discussion about Berachas HaMitzvah, so if the Rashba doesn't answer the question, so then the next source that you look to is the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef is in the Taf Lamed Beis, in Or HaChaim, where he talks about Bir HaMitz. So it says, how come we make the bracha on getting rid of the chametz? Why don't we make a bracha on bittul chametz? It says, because bittul chametz, that happens internally. That happens belave. That's a mental process. Anything that's all internal, so we don't make a bracha on. So there are those who maintain that if the whole goal of Shalach Manas really is accomplished when he gets the pleasure of the gift, so then that's very internal. That's not something we can really pin down to make a bracha on, following the view of the Beis Yosef. There are a number of other suggestions also, that are based, some of them are based on the idea that there is a tzedakah component. For example, the Das Sofer, again a descendant of the Chassam Sofer, so he invokes this approach. But some suggest this ties into another question, that there is a question in general of a principle, ein osin mitzvahs chavilos chavilos, that we don't want to combine mitzvahs into one process. To try to kill two birds with one stone is nice in other areas of life, it's not so nice when it comes to mitzvahs, it seems like we're trying to get off too easily. So there's a whole discussion, is it appropriate to combine Shalach Manas and Matanas Levyonim? That according to one of the views we've been saying, it seems that Shalach Manas is really about tzedakah. So maybe we could do both in one shot. Maybe we could do Matanas Levyonim and Shalach Manas together. So there were some who thought that that does work. And that maybe that's dafka the idea, that maybe we want to try to also include in our tzedakah people who are not so obviously in need and who don't want to be identified as being in need. And therefore, since we have a practice of Shalach Manas, the Shalach Manas is really there to obscure what's also Matanos Levyonim. So some suggest that for one reason or another, that's a reason not to make a bracha, either because it's going to identify the mitzvah, which we're trying not to do, we're trying to blur the difference between Shalach Manas and Matanos Levyonim, or it'll mean that we'll do both at one time and we'll make a bracha only on one, not the other. It doesn't seem to make sense. We're almost out of time, so let's see if the question gets addressed. So that's another suggestion. The Sri Deish has a tshuva about this issue, where he suggests, also following along the lines of what we mentioned a few minutes ago about the kfiyah, about compulsion, he says that a bracha also seems to create the same impression. If you're going to go bring a gift, and you're going to say, hi Joe, I've got a gift for you, hold on one second, blessed are you God who forced me and compelled me and ordered me and demanded that I give you this gift, it's not going to come across the same way. It's not going to have the same type of appreciation. So therefore, maybe that's another issue, and maybe that's also why by tzedakah in general, we also try to stay away from an overt bracha process. That's a part of the discussion. Others have similar approaches. Some say, for example, that since there is a divide in time from when you perform the mitzvah and when it gets fulfilled, because if it's only fulfilled when the person is happy to receive it, so then there is some type of a disconnect between the action and the fulfillment, that might also be a reason not to have a bracha. That's a whole discussion along those lines. Just to quickly mention one or two other points. So there is also a discussion that some of the poskim had, the Tshuvas Tirosh V'Yitzar has a discussion about this, and numbers of others do also, that maybe we should say that Divrei Torah should work. If you send around Divrei Torah, that should count for a Shalach Manas. You can make a stretch and say that helps for the Suda, according to the view that Divrei Zohar like this, that Divrei Torah works for Shalach Shuddis. We tend not to rely on that so much, especially for Sudas Purim, so that's a little bit of a weaker case. But if it's about the Shalom Bereis, so what better way to create unity than by sending around Divrei Torah? So some thought that might be an argument. The Mishpatech Yaakov is one of the descendants of the Arugas HaBosem. So he has a tshuva where he says he thinks the whole discussion is a Purim joke, because it doesn't make sense. But there are those who advocated this, and it's interesting to note that who are we associating with this position that it's about making friends? We've been associating so far the Manos HaLevi and the Rama. So both of them, it could be argued, they both did this in their personal lives. So the Manos HaLevi wrote the Sefer on the Megillah, which He may have given out a Shalach Manas, according to some versions of the story. And the Ramah himself did this as well. The Ramah wrote a sefer, a fascinating sefer, called Mechir Yain. It used to be very obscure, but now I think you can read copies of it on HebrewBooks.org. And elsewhere, the Ramah darshans every word of the Megillah. It goes, Vayihi, has a drush on Vayihi, Bimei. Drush on the word Bimei. So I think the Ramah also sent this out as Shalach Manas. So both the Ramah and the Trumas Adeshan, who maintain that Shalach Manas is about making friends, could be they actually did this in their actual lives. So just to maybe mention one more point, then we'll try to review what we spoke about. So we spoke about just one more issue. There is a discussion the Gemara has in Masechus Megillah on Daf Yud Beis. Gemara raises the question, Amainis Chayvu Soneihem Shel Yisrael, but also Hador Klaya. Why was it that the Jews, Soneihem Shel Yisrael is a euphemism, the Gemara says, when it talks about the Jews, Chalila, being destroyed, so it says the haters of the Jews. So why was it that the Jews at that time were deserving of such a threat, that they got in such a terrible position with the threat of destruction? So the Gemara has two approaches. One, Mipnesha Nanu, Misudasos, also Russia, because of their participation in the Suda of Achashverosh, which was a highly inappropriate event. Or because they were involved in what looked like Avodah Zarah, either with Nebuchadnezzar, with Haman, whatever it was, they were involved in actions that looked like idolatry. So Rabbi Nachum Zemba, who was a tremendous gaon, who was murdered in the Warsaw Ghetto, so Rabbi Nachum Zemba suggested that the two approaches in the Gemara about what Purim is all about, in essence, are correlated to by the two approaches in Shalach Manas. The Shalach Manas is designed to address these two issues. That if the problem was that we participate in inappropriate suda, so how do you fix that? You fix that with an appropriate suda, you fix that with sudas purim. So therefore we're saying everyone should be involved in sudas purim, both their own sudas purim and everyone else's sudas purim. That's the view of the Trumas Hadeshah. While if the idea is that we were guilty of some type of avodah zarah, so the Medrash says in Parshat Tzav, and this is actually a big theme in this past week's Parshat, Vayakel in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel, so we have Vayakel, we have a unity of Klal Yisrael, it's a type of a kapara. So the Medrash says in Parshat Tzav, the Kodesh Baruch Hu declares that Bizman Shehem B'chabur Achas, that when the Jews create one unit, Afilu Avdu Avodah Zarah Ani Mochel Hem, even if they were involved in idolatry, I would forgive them if they create Achdus afterwards. Afterwards we would forgive them because they create such Achdus. So therefore, the tikkun for Avodah Zarah is to create unity. So if that's the problem, so then the view of the Manas Halevi, that it's about Abba V'Shalom B'Reyes, that could be a corrective for Avodah Zarah. So just to very quickly review what we spoke about the fact that the question was raised, why does the Ramah say it's a thought that counts? Is this correct or not? The Chassam Sofer thought it should depend on why we have Shalach Manas. Is it like the Manas Halevi to make friends with the Trumas Tadeshin to help with the Suda? And perhaps if it's to make friends, then the thought counts. To help with the Suda, we can't allow Mechila for various technical reasons. And that was applied to many other issues. The Chassam Sofer himself applying it to the question of if you don't provide your own meals, are you obligated to provide for somebody else? The question of shlichus, which he thought shouldn't depend, the whole discussion in the Binyan Sin, but the Satmarov saying it does depend because you make more of an impact when you think about somebody who's not in front of you. The question of the position of the Ramah that it has to be received on Purim day itself, not even Purim night, and the view that others discuss about what if you send it there early, is that the help or not? And the Kajib lover's idea that maybe it should even be valuable even after Purim, technically, if the Purim Suda is still going on, following the view of the Trumas Hadeshah. And then the question of giving to a katan, which everyone agrees, is dependent on this whole machlokus, but they argue as how it should be dependent. And then we talked also about the question of somebody who's not home, is that something to be criticized, like the Aruch HaShulchan does, and the question of giving anonymously, the Ksav Sofer's discussion that if it's about making friends, it doesn't help to be anonymous, if it's about stakad, maybe that does make sense. The question of what is the shir, the Mishnah Berurah is saying that the shir is a shavakruta, and the Chesed Avram saying it's a kezayis, and the Ritva's idea that it shouldn't be too disproportionate to a person's wealth in either direction, and how that seems to reflect the Manos Halevi, and we saw that discussed also by the Mishnah Siyavis in terms of whether we would use compulsion, whether we use kafiyah, and also the question of if you're sending a gift that you can't eat for whatever reason, but the other person can, is that going to be appreciated in the same way? And we talked about the Ramah's view that an avil should not receive shalach manas, and different spins on why that is based on both views, and the question of Purim Meshulaf, should we have a combined Purim because it falls out on Shabbos, so the Meiri's view that the shalach manas should follow the Suda, what exactly does that represent? And we mentioned the additional view there also, that it's about sharing the aftermath of the Suda with other people. Then we talked also about the question of Shalach Manas B'Shutfus, if you sign on to a list with everyone else, to what extent does that help? It has certain benefits, but does it accomplish everything or not? And we talked about the question, if you send a gift that turns out to be treif afterwards, so are you in fulfillment or not? Hopefully they didn't need it, but how exactly does that play out in terms of that? And then we talked about the various questions, various positions on why there's no bracha on Shalach Manas. Those who say that the Rashba's answer is not going to help, because here it's not dependent on the other person because of the view of the Ramah, the list of thought that counts. Discussed a little bit of whether or not that's true, and then the Beis Yosef's perspective in general about the mitzvah shebalev, whether or not that applies here, and then we discussed some who thought it was relevant to the question if you combine shalach manas and matanos levyonim, maybe that could explain why there's no bracha, either because we're trying to obscure the connection or because it would mean you'd make one bracha on one and not on the other. And we talked about this radiation's position, that a bracha would signify again that you're being compelled, and maybe that would undermine the friendship idea, and also the perspective that maybe it's because there's a divide between when the mitzvah is being performed and when the mitzvah is being fulfilled. We discussed also the view of the Tirosh V'Yitzar, that maybe you could give Divrei Torah out, and that would also be a fulfillment of the Ramah's view, and it was interesting that both the Ramah and the Trimbas and the Imanos Halevi, who were associated with this view, maybe actually did that in their own personal lives. And then we just discussed this idea from Menachem Zemba, that when the Gemara says that there were two different causes for the threat of Purim, either some type of involvement in an inappropriate Zudah or involvement in something like Avodah Zarah, so perhaps this could correlate to the two reasons, that the way we fix this is with the appropriate Zudah of Purim and helping others to be able to fulfill that as well, or with the creation of Shalom Hareis, which is able to fix problems even up to and including Avodah Zarah after the fact. So it should be our Hatzlacha that we should be able to approach this Purim with all of these goals in mind, and we should have a proper Sudas Purim that takes everyone else into account, and through our Shalach Manas really create a lasting Shalom Hareis. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ray.